What if our greatest freedoms come not from careful planning, but from disruptive defiance? In Two Cheers for Anarchism, political anthropologist James Scott invites us to adopt an anarchist squint, a perspective revealing the hidden costs of hierarchical control while celebrating spontaneous cooperation. This isn't a manifesto for chaos, but rather a recognition that many social innovations emerge from the margins rather than the center. Scott challenges our fundamental assumptions about progress, expertise, and the necessity of top-down control, suggesting that meaningful freedom often flourishes in spaces beyond rigid organization. His fragmentary observations build into a powerful case. Sometimes the greatest threat to human flourishing isn't disorder, but our obsession with order itself. Have you ever waited at an empty intersection for a light to change? Scott observed this in Germany, noting how people struggled to violate even trivial rules. This inspired his Law of Anarchist Calisthenics: practice small acts of harmless disobedience to stay prepared for when breaking an unjust law truly matters. Powerful resistance often emerges through thousands of anonymous acts rather than grand gestures. Workers slow their pace, farmers underreport harvests, citizens forget permits. These individual refusals collectively create barriers against authority. The Confederate defeat owed much to desertion when soldiers returned to starving families, while Napoleon's conquests were limited by villages hiding young men to avoid conscription. All great emancipatory movements initially faced legal opposition. The civil rights movement began with countless small acts, sitting in whites-only sections, ignoring segregation signs, refusing to yield bus seats. Women's suffrage, labor rights, and environmental protection followed similar patterns. Our more just legal order owes much to those who recognized that sometimes progress requires challenging unjust regulations. Charismatic leadership isn't simply born from exceptional individuals. It's a relationship shaped by audience response. Martin Luther King Jr.'s Montgomery bus boycott speech illustrates this perfectly. His measured statements received little reaction until he proclaimed, "There comes a time when people get tired of being trampled over by the iron feet of oppression," triggering thunderous applause that transformed a formal meeting into an energized movement. King developed his signature themes through call and response, identifying which ideas sparked emotional connections. His listeners co-created his message, and his most memorable phrases emerged from dialogue with audiences in churches and street corners before reaching national platforms. The civil rights movement exemplifies this bottom-up dynamic. Voter registration drives, freedom rides, and lunch counter sit-ins emerged organically from local initiatives, often outpacing established organizations. Young activists frequently acted without waiting for approval, forcing organizations to catch up. This widespread disruption ultimately pushed civil rights legislation through Congress as the Kennedy administration sought to contain the growing unrest. In rural areas, roads often carry situational names: Guilford Road to Durham residents and Durham Road to Guilford residents, encoding practical knowledge about destinations. This organic system works locally but confuses outsiders, prompting standardized designations like Route 77. This tension between local utility and administrative efficiency appears throughout society. Permanent naming systems emerged when states needed them for taxation and policing. Industrial assembly lines similarly replaced artisanal knowledge with centralized control, reducing workers to interchangeable hands. Yet workers still develop intuitive understanding of equipment quirks no manual captures. Organizations actually function through strategic disregard of official procedures. French taxi drivers demonstrate this with Grève de Zèle strikes, following every regulation meticulously to paralyze Paris, revealing how production depends on improvisations beyond formal plans. These informal knowledge systems endure because they contain practical wisdom formal systems cannot replicate. Vernacular knowledge remains essential to how human systems actually function. Large-scale modernist schemes can be efficient for specific purposes like space exploration or transportation networks. However, they typically fail when confronting complex natural or human systems they don't fully understand. Scientific forestry illustrates this problem. 18th-century German foresters maximized timber revenue by replacing diverse forests with single species planted in rows. This worked initially, but eventually collapsed when the first rotation depleted soil nutrients and monoculture forests became vulnerable to pests and storms. By simplifying forests into timber-producing machines, they created green deserts with minimal biodiversity. Henry Ford's Fordlandia rubber plantation in the Amazon failed similarly. While rubber trees naturally grow scattered among diverse species to minimize disease, Ford's plantation arranged them in rows. Despite massive investment, the trees succumbed to diseases that even triple grafting couldn't prevent. Andean potato farmers demonstrate vernacular agriculture's resilience by cultivating 15 distinct parcels with multiple varieties as prudent bets based on local conditions. Each season yields not just crops, but farmers with ecological knowledge and autonomy, unlike scientific agriculture that standardizes both fields and farmers. Modernist urban planning faced similar failures. Planners prioritized visual order with sublime straight lines and strict separation of functions, but these cities proved unlivable. The demolition of the Pruitt-Igoe public housing project in 1972 marked what some consider the beginning of the postmodern era. Imagine a playground with no fixed equipment, just lumber, tools, rope, and discarded materials for children to use freely. This was architect C. Thi Sorensen's adventure playground in 1943 Copenhagen. Despite crowding, fighting was minimal because possibilities were endless and absorbing. When replicated in Minneapolis as the Yard, children naturally developed their own sophisticated sharing system to solve initial hoarding problems. This represents a parable of anarchy, a free society in miniature, showing unforced cooperation emerging from apparent chaos. A Bangkok NGO applied similar principles to squatter housing, where families collaborated on dwelling designs, sparking a broader housing rights movement. The Vietnam Veterans Memorial exemplifies this openness by allowing visitors to complete its meaning through personal tributes, unlike the imposing Iwo Jima Memorial. Play, often dismissed as purposeless, is actually foundational to development. Research shows that people deprived of play develop more antisocial behavior and decreased empathy. What if we evaluated institutions by how they develop people rather than just efficiency metrics? We might assess how work processes enlarge human capacities, develop varied skills, and foster creativity. Traditional assembly lines fail this test by deliberately de-skilling workers through repetitive tasks. The French town of Les Chambons-sur-Lignon sheltered over 5,000 refugees during Vichy France, revealing something profound about moral action. When faced with actual refugees at their doors, not hypothetical scenarios, villagers couldn't refuse to help. Their principles emerged from action rather than preceding it. The heart following the hand. This explains why specific stories move people more than abstractions. History often presents events with deceptive neatness that obscures participants' actual confusion. We create coherent narratives for contingent events, recasting developments like the French Revolution as inevitable when they actually depended on factors like weather and crop failures. Our greatest human freedom gains haven't come from orderly institutional procedures, but from disorderly, unpredictable action, cracking open the social order from below. The anarchist perspective shows that meaningful progress often emerges not from perfect order, but from the creative chaos of human improvisation and resistance.